Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hi, everybody. Hello, and welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name is Caitlin Durante.
My name is Jamie Loftus. We hope that this podcast finds you well. It has been a very difficult couple of weeks. And if you're listening, thank you for listening.
Yes, indeed.
So we're going to be getting back to your regularly scheduled
programming
movie episode next week. But we wanted to just have a bit of a conversation this week. A bit of a conversation. It was a conversation.
a full conversation.
A whole ass conversation. because I think, like many people, we've been taking stock of not just our own shit, but of our show's shit. Mm-hmm. And so we just want to speak to that briefly before sharing a whole conversation we had with friend of the cast and friend of us, Kenise mm-hmm. Mobley.
Yes, we'll get to that in a moment. But Jamie, like you said, I've been doing a lot of reflecting. You've been doing a lot of reflecting mm-hmm. on our episodes that we've done so far and the movies that we've chosen to cover and the dearth of Black movies in our episode history.
In our catalog.
Yes.
Yeah, which it's like we were talking about it because originally we were considering re-releasing an older episode this week. And as we were going through our own catalog, and at this point we have hundreds of episodes, mm-hmm. the pickings for a Black directed and written movie were, it was like, I was mad at us. Like, it.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. We should be embarrassed.
Yeah, we are. And we want to let all of our listeners know that it is, I mean, there's no excuse for it. We weren't giving that the attention that it deserves. And going through our own catalog was, oh boy, it was a humbling experience because mm-hmm. I think, you know, very often the excuse that we have found to not cover Black movies is that we are a mainstream movie podcast. And what mm-hmm. I don't think that I knew it, but I didn't think or articulate it well enough to the point where it, you know, became the reality of the show is, well, what qualifies the term mainstream? And mainstream, I think in a lot of ways, indicates whiteness because of
right.
money and because of, in our specific world, where Hollywood allocates its money and where it allocates its opportunities. So mm-hmm. I think that we've really often found an excuse to cover more white movies than not because those were the directors and the writers that have been given those opportunities. But that's not an excuse. It's mm-hmm. we're people that are more than capable of seeking out movies that are not written and directed by white people. I was just like, Jamie, Caitlin, what are you thinking? But yeah, that's some of the conversations that we've been having about the show. We also, of course, always want to be bringing you all sorts of voices, especially Black voices, and we will continue to do so, and we want to do it more than we currently do. I think we said this last week, but if there are specific guests that you're like, oh, I'd love to hear them on the show, let us know. Hopefully we can make it happen. But yeah, I think particularly with Black movies, we have failed our audience in just covering them, which will be rectified in the future, and the immediate future too.
Right.
So
yes.
If there are movies that you would like to hear covered, also let us know. But we've got shit in the works.
Indeed. And like, I mean, the whole thesis statement of our show is the media that we consume and how it influences individuals as well as culture. I mean, we know already, because we've talked about it on the show at large, that the underrepresentation or misrepresentation of any particular group contributes to a misunderstanding of that group. For example, the mis and underrepresentation of Black people, Black characters in cinema, contributes to systematic racism.
Yeah. Absolutely. And in many, many, many cases, it is white writers and directors perpetuating those stereotypes across all media, across, you know, we cover movies, but it's also very prevalent in television. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. And we do not want to be contributing to erasing or misrepresenting or undercovering, in particular, Black stories, or any non-white story, really. There are so many white stories, you know, possible to say the world is good.
Yes.
So we just kind of wanted to lead with that, and you know, we're gonna continue reflecting on it. But the main message is, we recognize that we have not covered enough Black cinema. We have not, as individuals, seen enough Black cinema because we have the privilege of a lot of popular media being marketed to us and being in many ways about us.
Right.
And that is something that we need to push past. Like, and so we talk about it more with Kinis, particularly. I loved our, like, just talking about movies that are about Black joy and like comedy, and like, there's just, you know, so we just wanted to lead with that, and also say that we're committed to not just covering movies, but also directing you to voices to follow. We'll continue to elevate the voices of all of our guests, but our Black guests in particular, we will be directing you to. If there's a guest, we said this last week as well, but if there's a guest on the Bechdelcast that you enjoyed and you don't follow their stuff, what are you doing? Like, get it together.
Click that follow button. It's not hard.
Make it right now. We apologize for our role in perpetuating the extreme whiteness of Hollywood. And at times, I think the extreme whiteness of feminism, where we discussed this briefly as well. But there is a very traceable history of feminism having a lot of asterisks being specifically for white women.
Definitely.
That is not what we're about. And we're you know, it's something that we're also reflecting on. So,
for sure.
Yeah. Thanks for being here. You know, if you're a listener of the show, you already know Kinis, and she was kind enough to talk to us about, I mean, she's a movie buff, and we love her, and we hope you enjoy the conversation.
Yeah. So without much further ado, let's cut to the conversation that we had with our dear friend, Kinis Mobley.
And we are joined now with one of our favorite guests, favorite friends, just general wonderful hero. it's our friend Kinis Mobley.
Hello! I've never been called a hero. Literally
a hero.
I'm going to, you know what? Me, people who save other people's lives, I was going to list professions, but some of those, like, now I feel like I can't endorse an entire profession of any kind. Because there's, so just the people who have saved people's lives, those are the heroes.
That's, you're also a hero.
Yeah, it's true. And if listeners out there, you remember Kenise from our Back to the Future episode, which is on our Patreon, as well as our Casino Royale episode on our main feed. Mm-hmm. So friend of the cast, returning third time. You're among the three-time
elite tier.
I want you guys to do what SNL does. And like, if I get on five times, I want a jacket.
Oh, we should do that.
They do. You get like a smoking jacket, like a maroon velvet smoking jacket, and it has like five timers club. I just watch way too much SNL, so I know that, that like really well. But yes,
that is both heartwarming and so weird to me. It's like Alec Baldwin has a jacket. I don't want him to have a jacket, but he does.
He does. He 100% has that five timers jacket.
As we're recording this, Cops just got canceled forever.
Yes.
Wait, Cops, the TV program?
Yes. Oh my God. We just found it. The profession.
The profession is over. We did it. Success.
We abolished the police. No, for now, it's just the television program is over. But as far as media goes, that is a really good step. There's,
I didn't even know it was still on.
I've seen so many tweets say that. They're like, they're still make cops. Yes, they're still having the boys in blue run after people who are confused.
How long has that show been on? It's been on since what, the 80s, 90s?
The 80s. I think it's 32 seasons is what I saw earlier today.
Oh my word. Oh boy.
Well, defund Cops the show.
And they did. Yeah, did it.
They did. It's a start. It's a start.
Yeah, it's a start. Well, yeah, I guess we want to just take an opportunity to reflect on our show's history, what we can do moving forward as the hosts of this show to make sure we are being as inclusive and as intersectional as possible.
There are some podcasts that talk about film, and the only time they talk about black film is when it's like, this is a big, important black film, and it is being nominated for Academy Awards. And because they do that, it is often black films that center on pain.
Yeah.
So, hey, I'm a big fan, but also my push is to please include movies that incorporate black joy, silly black movies, movies that aren't necessarily like critical darlings, but fan darlings, because it's not just, I swear to God, if I have to listen to another podcast where it's like, okay, let's dissect 12 Years a Slave and let's talk about whipping scenes for a long time. And I'm like, who is this fun for? Like, so yeah, that's my stance.
What are some of your favorite movies that celebrate black joy?
So every Thanksgiving, I watch a double feature of Coming to America and Trading Places.
Ooh, that's so much fun.
I love those movies. I don't know what it is about Thanksgiving and Eddie Murphy, but mentally those two things are paired forever. So every Thanksgiving, I watch those really fun comedies. Also, Dope. Have you guys seen this?
Yeah, I love Dope.
It's one of the best teen movies of the last decade, and I think it doesn't get a lot of props. I just think it's so funny.
Why haven't we covered Dope?
Oh, please, please do. And it has, there's a lady in it who's like in a bunch of other things that I really like. And she's like a teen. And sometimes she is very much so dressed like a teenage boy. And sometimes she's like super glamorous, but she's fantastic. Sorry to Bother You. How Stella Got Her Groove Back. I just saw this. Like, I know I should have seen it years ago, but I just saw it earlier this year. The way they shoot Taye Diggs is a thing of beauty, and I I think it's important that we recognize that.
Sure.
Bad Boys is hilarious. Bad Boys 2. I haven't seen Bad Boys 3 because it came out when theaters were completely shutting down.
Right.
I don't think a lot of people think of this as a black film, but it's directed by Spike Lee. Inside Man.
Oh.
With Denzel Washington and Clive Owen. It's a really fun bank heist movie. It has Chiwetel Ejiofor and it has a ton of people. Willem Dafoe's in it. It's Jodie Foster. Check it out.
Wow, all-star cast.
And yeah, it's great. It's high energy. I'm a big fan. Good Hair, Chris Rock's documentary about the hair care industry in the black community. Girls Trip is hilarious. This is available on Amazon Prime. And I know Amazon is bad, but this movie is good. The Last Black Man in San Francisco. Music and the way that that was shot. Great. Creed was so good. It made me join a gym. Like, I left the Somerville Theater in Davis Square, Somerville, Massachusetts, and I walked to a Boston sports club directly, and I joined it because I was like, Kenise, you need to change your life. This is
media being influential.
I mean, I would say it changed my life, but I did not continue to go. I went for a few months and then I stopped. Widows, it's not light and upbeat, but it is, again, I love a heist film.
Oh no, Widows is awesome. Yeah,
I love getting a crew together, planning a crime, committing a crime. It's great. And Steve McQueen is one of my favorite directors. I think the way that he shoots things is so interesting. And he got Colin Farrell to be at once likable and hateable, which is, I think, a fantastic lane for Colin Farrell. Us, Get Out, of course. I Am Not Your Negro, also on Amazon Prime. Sorry.
No ethical consumption.
City of God.
Oh, the Brazilian film.
I think it's important to show like black people across the planet because we are everywhere.
For sure.
But that was one of like my. I made my mom watch that when I was in high school. I just found it so moving.
It's so good.
And Love and Basketball. That's going to be my list.
Yes.
My current list of very, very good, not homework feeling black movies.
Nice. Amazing. Yeah. That's a great list.
Yeah.
And we need to cover a lot of those.
Yeah, that's on. I mean, and for listeners, too, if there are movies from black directors or black writers that you would love to see covered in the show, we're looking out for ones we haven't seen or heard of as well. So, you know, at us, baby. We're ready.
For sure. Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, most of the films that you listed just then, Kenise, have black either writers or directors. Not all of them, but I think most of those did.
I think most of them do. I think some of the ones, especially the ones that are older, like Bad Boys, Coming to America, I don't think those have black directors.
I mean,
but
Michael
Bay. Star black people, so.
Right. But there are a fair number of black narratives in film that don't have black filmmakers behind the camera, and I think we talked about this on like the Hidden Figures episode and things like that.
Yeah.
Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse on the Matreon episode we did about that movie. I can't think of any others off the top of my head right now, but I know they're out there because historically movies about all types of people have still mostly been made by white men specifically. Speaks to the fact that black creatives have not been given opportunities, their work has not been prioritized, all those issues that lead to
the help.
Just there being exactly the help, Green Book nightmares such as those.
And yes. I mean, the help, I think as of this recording, is still in the top 10 on Netflix.
It makes
which
me
is just,
so mad. It makes me so mad. Who is, I don't know these people and I don't want to meet them, but who are these people that are like, you're right, I will help with racial justice by watching a story about a black domestic worker who is deprived of her rights. Yes, that's what I will do. That seems like a good idea. This, to me, okay, and I, this may be too much and I recognize that, but to me, the help trending on Netflix is akin to the fact that like ebony in air quotes pornography is like rising up the Pornhub charts because people are like, I am doing a good deed. I am helping racial justice right now. It's a complete missing the mark thing, but it keeps happening and it's making me mad.
Oh, there, good grief.
Yeah, it's so cringy. There is a tweet from former guest on the show, the best, Ayo Edebiri. She's
so cool.
She really is.
I met her when she lived in New York, and I was just like, that's a cool lady.
She's a fellow Massachusetts resident.
Maybe that,
she's
I was getting
there.
That. I was getting the Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah, those Mass vibes.
Yeah.
We're all so cool. But she is She had some, because we circulated a list of black movies and where you could watch them right now, a list that was circulating that was like Netflix, Hulu, you know, just to start. But Io also tweeted something I wanted to share where she said, all the anti-racist watch lists that don't include Daughters of the Dust or Losing Ground or Hollywood Shuffle or Ganja and Hess or The Watermelon Woman or Love and Basketball. Remember Love and Get Out? You like black movies. Surprise. LOL, it doesn't have to be homework.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that hit for me as mm-hmm. well as just like, we should just be watching more black movies. And, you know, as a show, if the powers that be are not bringing it to us and not right. pushing it, then it's on us. We're a movie podcast. We need to seek it out. And it's yeah. not like we're watching movies. It's yeah. fun. It's fun.
Hollywood Shuffle is a really fun movie.
I haven't seen it. I'm excited it's great. To watch it.
I am going to admit right now that I don't think, I think I saw it in college, but I haven't seen it since then, so I remember none of the details because I don't remember my youth. So
same. Yeah. I saw it in college and not since, but I remember it being really funny and like providing some, you know, compelling commentary.
Yeah, I think celebrating black movies that aren't just about black pain will also help with that, because I think the perception is if you're watching a weighty black movie or like an important black movie, it's gonna be A, about race and civil rights or slavery, and mm-hmm. B, depressing as hell and something that you have to sit through like homework. And I know that is not the case. So just mm-hmm. doing more of a variety of black movies, I think, is important.
Right. For sure.
Absolutely. Because it's, yeah, it's movies. Like,
right.
yeah.
Well, Jamie, to touch on something you mentioned about, like, if the powers that be don't, like, basically the point that I'll arrive at, so I'll just get there. We all went to film school, right?
Yeah,
we studied film,
like
in
it or not.
School. Kanice, the two of us have master's degrees from Boston University.
We don't like to bring it up. I know.
Film. We would never bring it up.
Feel attacked, but continue.
Just reflecting back on the movies that get mentioned in like film textbooks,
yeah.
the movies that get screened in classes, unless you specifically take like a class on black cinema, just general film classes. And maybe this has changed in the years that I have gone to school, or maybe this is different for certain schools, but the two different schools I went to for film school, they were like, yeah, so there were some important black films like Do the Right Thing and Boys in the Hood and probably some other ones. Also, there was a whole blaxploitation movement.
Yeah.
And the end, that's all you need to know. And they really just completely gloss over and did not make a priority of teaching film students about black cinema. And should the onus have been on me to seek more out for myself? Yes. Did I do that? Not to the extent that I should have. So yes, that is yet another area that, you know, I will work on.
We went to the same place. I remember I had to fight with my professors a little bit to take a race and gender course, because that wasn't part of the master's degree program. It was an undergraduate class. And I was like, I really think I should be getting some of this information.
Yeah,
and it was there where I saw She's Gotta Have It. It was there where I saw Paris is Burning. It was there that I saw like any representation of people who looked like me, because in screenwriting class, in film history class, we did a lot of stuff. I mean, I saw every single Coen Brothers film and like dozens of films by like French auteur directors, but I still don't think, like, I can confidently say that in school I didn't see a single African film. Like, no films that were made in Africa. I still haven't really seen those. Like, it just, I think the only director that even came up was Spike Lee, but that was it.
It's frustrating because I feel the same way. Like, was on me to seek out more, and I didn't do as much as I should have. But I think especially when we're talking about media and media education, which is what we have allegedly done from time to time, between like talking about our various educational degrees in Alfred Molina, but like in theory, there's just in like film education and in media studies, it's so white. Like it's it again, it's like kind of embarrassing to like be aware of it at the time, but not say enough about it. Where I think I brought this up on the show before. I took a class called like Wilder, Allen, and Kaufman. Like mm-hmm. just three like it's and again, it was like, yeah, the black films that we studied were very like it was just the same three movies that you hear about in every course. And it's like we can't just that means that first of all, there should be black film professors employed in universities. And also just no matter who's teaching there, you know, Kenise, you shouldn't have had to watch every Coen Brothers movie. That.
So I saw all of them except Lady Killers because they weren't going to do that. They weren't going to make us watch the Lady Killers.
Well, yeah, that's not a very good
movie. The Coen Brothers would even co-sign that decision.
I think they would want to get rid of that as part of their canon. And I'm wondering what Tom Hanks thinks about it. I just, right. Yeah.
Choices. It is, I mean, that's like something that, I don't know, I feel naive for not interrogating that more fully while I was in school. But I hope, and I think now, just based on, I did a little research into like today's students, smarter than me, yes. And there is... There has been more pushback in
great.
Film schools to not just teach. It feels like the same 50 movies, no matter what school you're going to,
yes.
basically. Mm.
Yes. They all got the same syllabus from online, and they were like, yep, check. We are doing the canon, and that's it. And if you want to see anything that's outside of that canon, if you want to see people of color that are directors, if you want to see female directors, you have to go and seek those out.
And it's frustrating that, I mean, as valuable as those classes are and as happy as I am that they exist, that the stories are still othered to a separate class.
Like, yes.
That right. just indicates that the school doesn't feel that black film is film. They're like, no, this is a separate class.
It's a separate thing. This is a class that's right. race and gender where film is a component, but we're not really counting it. And what I think it does is it produces and has produced generations of film scholars and film critics who simply don't believe that works by black artists exist. Like, they're like, oh, it's not, like, kind of referring back to, like, the Oscars So White campaign. It's mm-hmm. not that we are doing something bad. It's just that the system hasn't turned out any filmmakers versus I haven't done the research to know to go out and seek these films out.
Mm-hmm. And again, it, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. I think that in terms of the diversity of how many black film critics are being put on and given the appropriate reach is also like an issue that comes up with us all the time, where there's mm-hmm. so many movies that we've covered that are like, well, keep in mind this movie got mixed reviews, but probably because everyone who reviewed it was a white man and this movie was not for them, and
yes.
so that's why they were just like, I didn't get it, see, like
that is infuriating, and I agree 100%.
Yeah, and so we're gonna aim to, but I mean, we've had a number of black film critics on the show before. Like Joelle Monique is like one of the best in the game. She's amazing. Ashley Ray is a writer I really enjoy reading, and she's so
her
funny.
Twitter's the best.
It's just she's just on all the time. I love her so much. And and Danielle Radford is another amazing black media critic.
Yeah.
There are so many wonderful black film critics. I think it is like changing slowly, but in terms of like, are they getting the appropriate microphone and reach, and are they being put on in the way that they deserve to be? I think that there's still a ways to go, and we'll commit to showcasing those voices, because sometimes you see like a random white guy review a movie that they just clearly didn't even attempt to put it like it's just most film critics assume that the movie they're watching is made for them specifically.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's wild. I've heard in I do listen to a few film podcasts, and there is one that I like, but it is led by two white men. And just the nuances that they miss out on entirely because they're not familiar with the culture makes them say, oh, this isn't very deep, or these scenes aren't well acted. But it's like they're operating on something that you just haven't taken the time to think critically about versus not saying anything at all.
And we have those blind spots too. And it's like, it's like just stuff that we need to commit to working and figuring out. And I'll repeat this podcast recommendation again, just because I've been listening to even more of it than I usually do. But Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood. You gotta listen to it. It's so funny. And I hope that we'll have them on the show soon as well.
Yeah, that and like there's, I think, a discussion to be had around, I guess, like the must-see movies of the year and how it's very seldom that they are black movies. I think that like Get Out was a recent exception, but like it's very rare that there will be critical darlings or movies that like critics by and large love and say like, you got to see this. This is the must-see movie of the year. Because it is like white critics mostly or historically leading the narrative of like what movies you have to see.
Right.
And
which results in us getting every Richard Linklater film being one that you absolutely have to see. Because isn't Boyhood universal? Everyone feels this strongly about it as men in their 40s. Everyone feels that way.
Mm-hmm.
That killed me. I was like, it was fine. I don't know why everyone's okay. Whatever.
Right. Yeah. They really played us with that one.
Yes.
I didn't see it until last year. And I was just like, what? That was what I was.
Have to see.
They were really betting on that kid growing up to be a good actor. Yikes.
Whoops.
Yeah, no, but I mean, that was a tangent. But yeah, I totally agree. And I think, again, it's like where we have a platform where we talk about film, I include us in that as well. Mm-hmm. And that's like, that is something that we need to get better at is even if the marketing department is not going to tell us this is a must-see movie, it's like, you know, let's seek out the movie. Let's watch it. Let's talk about it. It's truly the easiest thing in the world to do. And we'll be doing it much more.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, I lived kind of between one theater, which was in a whiter neighborhood, and one theater, which was in a blacker neighborhood. And even then, it was really clear to see which movies were advertised and pushed where. So like a black movie would be maybe on one screen playing twice a day at the big one in the white neighborhood. But then you'd go over to the black neighborhood and it would be on like four screens. It felt like they were like, come and see this maybe, but we don't anticipate that this audience could have any interest in this type of story.
Which is so limiting, like for it. It just, and it just assumes whiteness is the dominance.
It assumes whiteness is the dominance, and that it fulfills the prophecy that that movie won't make as much money because they're not putting it in as many places, and so it has to like every theater has to sell out or it has to blow out sales records in order to be considered a success. Like. Why, like, Girls Trip made so much money, but it had to be very good in order to make that money, if that makes sense.
And also framing, I remember Girls Trip being framed as, like, a surprise success.
Yes.
And, like, what is that supposed to be indicating? Fucking, like, Queen Latifah's in it. How is it a surprise that that movie would
Queen
be
Latifah,
successful?
Queen Latifah, Jada Pinkett Smith, Tiffany had, like, it had such a
major
good
movie stars.
Yeah. It was very good. I liked it a lot.
I loved it.
It was very funny. There's a very specific SNL skit. Tom Hanks, it's on Black Jeopardy. Did you guys see this?
Maybe?
Doesn't sound super familiar.
I think it's one of the best sketches that SNL put out for a while. But it's Tom Hanks. He's on Black Jeopardy, which is a bit that they do that's really recurring. And they ask a question about a Madea movie. And he answers it right away. And everyone is shocked. They're like, you know all of Madea? He's like, it's a heartwarming film where they talk about God. I feel like that hits with a lot of people. And it just, everyone was shocked and like, yeah, I guess it does. I think that if they approached it more like that these are themes that are fairly universal that a lot of people can relate to, that these films would have wider releases and bigger openings.
Right.
Absolutely.
That's the thing about storytelling is that, sure, there are some movies that are geared for a more specific niche audience, but like a lot of movies in general try to appeal to as large of an audience as possible by exploring very universally relatable themes. And many Black films do this, and for film marketers to assume that a white audience couldn't connect with a story with a Black protagonist or a story that explores a Black experience, like, that is ludicrous, and Hollywood needs to get a clue.
And like invest in Black creatives too, because yes. it's such a such a cyclical issue of like, you know, if Black creators don't get the money to make their movie, then there's automatically less movies to market. If a movie is made by a Black creative, it's automatically marketed less because there is this like prevalent assumption that no matter how many times it's proven wrong, is always assumed over and over and over that Black movies won't sell as well, even though it's so frustrating. Like it's constantly, multiple times a year, proven wrong. But you know, it just becomes like this vicious circle. And since we cannot count upon the entertainment industry to improve, which it does so slowly, but it truly, I mean, I feel like it does come down to like individuals being like, I am going to look outside of what is literally put in front of me because so often what is put directly in front of us, as we discuss on the show constantly, sucks.
And I mean, part of that responsibility is ours to go and research the films that aren't maybe in the mainstream because Hollywood refuses to try to let them be in the mainstream, and to watch those films and share them with our audience and our friends and everyone around us. What I think we want to do now is just encourage our listeners to do the same work that we are committing to in terms of discovering more Black cinema, consuming it.
And we'll also be using like more of our platform, more of our social media to direct you where we can. Mm-hmm. And we're always like, we want to hear what you're watching, what you'd like to see covered on the show, which our listeners have never been shy about letting us know. So we trust that will continue. But we're going to prioritize more finding voices to elevate and show to you with our humble baby platform.
Definitely.
That we have.
And I honestly, like, we're focusing on Black cinema right now, but we could stand to cover more movies about other underrepresented groups. There's movies about Black, Brown, Asian, Indigenous people. We could cover more queer movies, more international movies, like not just English language American movies. Like, there's just a whole scope of things that we can definitely...
The thing is, we can read, and we should do it more.
Indeed. Another thing that we are going to do moving forward is an adjustment to our nipple scale.
Yes.
We've always treated it as, how does this movie represent women? But that is something that we, of course, realize isn't all-inclusive. So what we're going to do instead, and this is what we've done with the podcast, with the discussions itself, but
we're just changing the official rules.
Yeah, extending it to the nipple scale is rather than how does the movie represent women, it's more how does the movie hold up when we're looking at it from an intersectional feminist lens.
100%.
And that way it's more inclusive, it's more intersectional. That is what we're going to do moving forward.
Yeah, because we also fully acknowledge, I mean, we always say that the Bechdel test is a flawed metric, but one of the ways in which it is a flawed metric is that, by and large, we don't have the numbers on this, but we've seen movies. I think that oftentimes the Bechdel test is most often passed between two white women.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's on us to be taking and coming at the entire show through an intersectional lens. And that means, like we always do, we will be talking beyond the Bechdel test, but even with our own metric and with how we're approaching the Bechdel test, we're going to be kind of making that a little more focused and a little more clear mm-hmm. moving forward. And I think that I also want to give a hat tip to past guest Danny Fernandez for making that point on a recent Twitter thread that mm-hmm. she just mentioned the Bechdel test often caters to white women,
right.
which is absolutely true. And we will be more mindful in, you know, pointing that out.
For sure. When a movie does pass, it's often between two cishet white women. And while that's not nothing, it's definitely...
Not everything.
Not everything.
Yeah.
What a great way to put it. And also, speaking of the Bechdel test, and, you know, listeners, you know that we only use that as a really springboard to inspire a larger conversation. There's still a way that we could approach even how we treat the Bechdel test mm-hmm. as being more inclusive, because we've always said, you know, female identifying characters who speak to each other. I've seen renditions of it where it's women, femmes, and non-binary people if they speak to each other. So it's basically just broadening it up to more identities on the gender spectrum speaking to each other and still allowing that to pass. So
yeah.
Moving forward, I think that would be a good idea to Absolutely. Implement.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, thank you so much, Kanis, for being here.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course.
Yeah.
Where can people follow your stuff online? What would you like to plug?
You can find me online at Kanis Mobley on all the platforms. That's Twitter, that's Instagram, that's Venmo if you're nasty. I don't know why I said that, but you get it.
Venmo,
sure, whatever.
Kanis,
your life.
Right now.
Yeah. But only if you're... No, that's weird. I take it back, my bet. Okay. And also, you could listen to my podcast, which is called Love About Town,
yes.
Which, Caitlin, you have been a guest on, mm-hmm. and Jamie was a guest on one of the first incarnations of the pod.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Actually, Caitlin, you were on both types of the pod.
I was on both. Yeah. People About Town, right? And then Love About Town.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Love yep. it.
Thanks for having me. yes, please follow Kanis and Venmo her at least $10, preferably more. And, you know, you can follow us at all the normal places, Instagram and Twitter as well. You know, the other stuff. We don't need to hawk our merch right now.
Yeah, well, and we'll be back next week. Spoiler alert, we're doing Tangerine next week.
Yes.
Woo.
So excited. Love that movie.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, thanks everyone for listening, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.